Members, please. Appear to lack a quorum. The House stand at ease for a moment. Would the clerk please take the roll?
9 members present, Mr. Speaker.
House will stand at ease for a moment. House, please come back to order. Would the clerk please take the quorum call?
27 members present.
Thank you. Today's chaplain is Reverend John Campbell from the Aldersgate United Methodist Church. Would you please rise for the invocation?
Let us pray. O Lord, open our eyes that we may see the needs of others. Open our ears that we may hear their cries. Open our hearts so that they need not be without help in their distress. Let us not be afraid to defend the weak because of the anger of the strong, nor afraid to defend the poor because of the anger of the rich. Show us where love and hope and faith are needed, and use us to bring them to those places. And so open our eyes and our ears that we may this day be able to do some work of peace for you. Amen.
Mr. Newman, you lead us in the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mr. Ellis?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the prayer be spread upon the journal.
Is your objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Will the clerk please certify as to the correctness of the journal for the previous day?
As chief clerk, I certify as to the correctness of the journal for the 88th day.
Mr. Majority Leader?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the journal for the 88th day be approved as certified.
Is your objection? Is your objection? Hearing no objection, so ordered. Are there guests to be introduced this morning? Representative Navarre?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In Gallery A, first of all, I'll introduce Bob Evans, the governor's legislative liaison, and someone else who's more important than Bob, because without her, Bob would not be here, Bob's mother, Lucille Evans.
Mr. Gruenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It gives me a lot of pleasure today to introduce two very special guests in Gallery B. The first one who's introducing himself right now is Daniel Gruenberg, and then his mother, Katie Gruenberg, my wife. Please help me welcome them.
Mr. Hudson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Representative Ulmer and I have two guests in Gallery B this morning. Cheryl Ann Young, who's the editor of a weekly, I believe it is, a Christian weekly, and her son, Harley Dufek, and they're both over in B. And would they stand, and let's give them a big welcome this morning.
Mr. Ellis?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It's my great pleasure this morning to introduce a special friend of mine and a friend of a number of the members of the body. Her son, Ryan, was a guest page in the body earlier this week. She's in Gallery A. She serves as the executive director of the Democratic Party of Alaska, doing a fine job in that position, Ms. Kathleen Rice.
We have messages from the governor?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Messages from the other house?
The Senate has approved the following citation, and it is transmitted for enrolling, honoring Mitch DiMiente. The Senate has passed and returned House Concurrent Resolution Number 41 relating to Earth Day, and it has been sent to enrolling. The Senate has passed the following, and they are transmitted for consideration. Committee substitute for Senate Bill 180, Finance, by the Finance Committee. An act relating to the motor fuel tax and its exemptions and providing for an effective date.
Refer to the Finance Committee.
Committee substitute for Senate Bill 408, Finance, by the Finance Committee. An act requiring health care providers to report cases of fetal alcohol syndrome and relating to reports by the Department of Health and Social Services concerning common diseases of public health significance.
Health, Education, Social Services, and Finance.
I have no further messages from the Senate, Mr. Speaker.
Are there other communications?
We have received from the Department of Administration the monetary terms of the agreement between the State of Alaska and the Public Employees Local 71. And we've also received several letters of disclosure, and they'll be in today's supplement. I have no further communications, Mr. Speaker.
Are there reports of standing committees?
The State Affairs Committee has considered House Bill 386, eligibility for permanent fund dividends, and recommends it do pass and attaches two fiscal notes. Report was signed by Boucher Chairman, signing do pass, Boucher, Menard, Zawacki, and Finkelstein. Signing no recommendation, Hanley. House Bill 386 has a further referral to the Judiciary Committee. The State Affairs Committee has considered House Bill 440, Alaska-Soviet Far East Commission. Recommends it be replaced with the Foreign Trade Committee substitute with a new title. It's reported back as follows. Report was signed by Boucher Chairman, signing do pass, Finkelstein, and Boucher. Signing no recommendation, Hanley and Zawacki. House Bill 440 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The Resources Committee has considered House Bill 541, Guidelines for Litigation Settlement. Recommends it be replaced with the Resources Committee substitute with a new title and due pass and attaches a zero note with analysis. The report was signed by Menard, co-chair, signing due pass, Menard, Davidson, Jacko, and Davis. Having no recommendation, Sharp and Hudson. House Bill 541 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The Resources Committee has considered Senate Concurrent Resolution 42, Inside Passage Marine Park System, and recommends it do pass. Report was signed by Menard, co-chair, concurring, Menard, Davidson, Jacko, Hudson, Foster, and Navarre. Signing no recommendation, Sharp. Furnace signed to amend. Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 42 has no further referral. The Labor and Commerce Committee has considered Senate Concurrent Resolution 53, Governor's Conference on Small Business, and recommends it do pass. Report was signed by Donnelly, Chairman, concurring, Donnelly, Boyer, Finkelstein, Lehman, Collins, and Gruenberg. Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 53 has no further referral. The Labor and Commerce Committee has considered Senate Bill 322, Loss of Income Insurance, Small Loans Act, and recommends it do pass. Report was signed by Donnelly, Chairman, signing do pass, Donnelly, Boyer, Lehman, Collins, and Gruenberg. Finkelstein has no recommendation. Senate Bill 322 has no further referral. I have no further standing committee reports, Mr. Speaker.
Are there reports of special committees?
I have none, Mr. Speaker.
Are there citations or resolutions for introduction?
Citation honoring Joe Gibbons by Representatives Furness, Barnes, Taylor, and Martin. Citation honoring Class AA All-State Basketball Teams by Representative Schultz. Citation honoring John A. Brisky by Representative Boucher. I have no resolutions for introduction, Mr. Speaker.
Are there bills for introduction?
I have none, Mr. Speaker.
Clerk, please read the first item on today's calendar. Excuse me, Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just want to note for the record that Representative Barnes and Representative Gall are ill today and therefore excused.
Thank you. The clerk, please read the first item on today's calendar.
House Bill 400 by the Rules Committee by request of the Governor. An act relating to the fisheries business tax and license and to persons subject to the tax and the licensure requirement, establishing civil penalties for failure to obtain a fisheries business license and providing for an effective date. The Resources Committee has considered the bill and recommends it do pass. Concurring, Davidson, Jacko, M. Davis, Navarre, Foster, Hudson, and Menard. Furness has no recommendation. The Finance Committee has considered the bill, recommends it be replaced with a Finance Committee substitute and do pass. Concurring, Larson, Swackhammer, Omer, Barnes, Kopanen, and Wallace. Having no recommendation, Phillips and Schultz. I have one committee substitute on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Speaker, can we have brief at ease?
House is standing at ease. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 400 be considered in lieu of the original bill.
Is there objection? Is there objection? Representative Brown, we're voting. Hearing no objection, the Finance Committee substitute has been adopted in lieu of the original bill. Does the clerk have amendments?
Amendment number 1 by Wallace to page 2, line 23, and it has been placed on each member's desk.
Representative Wallace.
Amendment.
Is there objection? Is there objection? Hearing no objection, amendment number 1 has been adopted. Does the clerk have additional amendments?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 400 amended be considered in gross advance, third reading, and placed on final passage.
Is there objection? Is there objection to the advancement motion? Hearing no objection, the bill has been advanced from second to third reading. Would the clerk please read the bill for the third time?
Committee substitute for House Bill 400, Finance amended by the Finance Committee. An act relating to the fisheries business tax and license and to persons subject to the tax and the licensure requirement, establishing civil penalties for failure to obtain a fisheries business license and providing for an effective date.
Is there discussion? Ready for the question? Question for the House is, shall committee substitute for House Bill number 400, Finance, amended House, pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Does any member fail to vote? The clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change their vote? The clerk, please take the roll.
32 yeas, no nays.
House Bill 400 passed the House. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call vote on final passage be considered a roll call vote on the effective date clauses.
Is there objection? Is there objection to the effective date clauses? Hearing no objection, the effective date clauses have been adopted. Clerk, please read the next item on today's calendar.
Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Donnelly.
Can I move to bring up my reconsideration the reconsideration of House Bill 355?
House Bill 355 is now before you. Clerk, please read the bill.
Committee substitute for House Bill 355, Labor and Commerce amended by the Labor and Commerce Committee. An act relating to insurance premium taxes and providing for an effective date.
The bill's before you in third reading, Mr. Donnelly.
Mr. Speaker. Move and ask unanimous consent that we return to second reading for the specific purpose of rescinding our action and adopting amendment number 1.
Is there objection? There's objection to returning to a second reading. Mr. Donnelly, you can describe amendment number, was it amendment number 1? All right.
Yes, Mr. Speaker. Amendment number 1, for the member's information, was the amendment by which we removed the uniform aspects of the bill as to title insurance. And
are you ready for the question? Mr. Ellis?
Speaker, could we have a brief at ease, please?
House will stand at ease. House, please come back to order. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Can we go down to unfinished business?
Is there objection? Hearing none, Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Moving to ask unanimous consent that Representative Jack will be excused from the call of the House and until he gets back. There's death in the family. He's left town.
Is there objection? Hearing no objection, Mr. Jacko is excused. Are you ready for the question? Question for the House. Shall the House return to second reading? Shall the House return House Bill 355 to second reading for the purpose of rescinding our action and adopting Amendment Number 1? Members may proceed to vote. Any member fail to vote? Clerk lock the roll. Does any member wish to change their vote? Clerk, please take the roll.
26 yeas, 6 nays.
We're in second reading. Mr. Donnelly.
Mr. Speaker, I think the motion at this time would be I move that the House rescind its action in adopting Amendment Number 1.
Mr. Donnelly, you have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just to refresh the members' memories on Amendment Number 1. Amendment Number 1 would create a special class of taxation for title insurance in the state, in that it would be the only for-profit insurance type of insurance that would be exempt from the uniform 2.7% tax. In other states, title insurance is treated the same. And in fact, here in Alaska, the testimony and information we've gotten from the Division of Insurance is that the companies are making enough money that they're subsidizing their other aspects of their business with the money they're making off title insurance at this time. And there's hearings scheduled on this subject with Division of Insurance. Additionally, materials provided by the division show that title insurance is as difficult to regulate and has had as many hearings on title insurance issues as there has been for workers' compensation. And workers' compensation has provided the division with revenues more than four, five, six times greater than the amount of revenues from title insurance in that same period of time. So we have a particular industry that's not carrying its own weight in the cost of its regulation. An amendment that would create a special exemption for this one class of insurance that no other type of insurance enjoys. We're talking about a potential escalation of about $7 to $8 on the purchase of a $100,000 home. And that's just simply not significant, Mr. Speaker, to the consumer's purchase of the home. And it's just good public policy not to have a special exemption for this particular class of insurance.
Mr. Furness? Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Let me rise to object at this time. Mr. Speaker, I actually asked for reconsideration of this item yesterday because I wanted to review the information firsthand myself. And I was particularly interested in the statement that the industry, I guess it had more hearings than workers' comp or some of the others. And so I asked them to submit me some information. Now, I note based upon the documents submitted from the Division of Insurance that they held two hearings in 1977. It looks like there was one hearing in 78, there was one in 1979. Now, I note in 1979, the state generated $78,000 in revenues in form of tax. They held, looks like, two hearings in 1981, Mr. Speaker, 429-81 and 910-81. In 1981, they generated $122,850. So it doesn't seem to me like there's a tremendous amount of work for two hearings. I'm sure there's other things that goes on. And for the state to generate $122,000, looks like there was one hearing on 5/22/84. And that year, we generated $191,160. I find it hard to believe that the state cannot conduct whatever redress of hearings or whatever in that department for nearly $200,000, and looks like there was only one hearing. Looks like there's another hearing scheduled for 4/24/1990, and while I don't have the 1990 information, I can share here at the body that in 1987 the state collected $110,000, 1988 we collected $100,000. Now, I was somewhat led to believe yesterday that the problems within the industry were problems created as a result of consumers complaining. But what I'm led to believe is that problem is actually within the industry itself. Some of it can be laid to competition within the industry. Some of those probably could best be addressed by setting up a task force to basically look at the statutes and look at all of the guidelines and the regulations and come to this body with a comprehensive bill dealing with the problems that the Division of Insurance has acknowledged. But, Mr. Speaker, based upon the information I have, I cannot justify passing this amendment and increasing that tax. Let me share one last thing. Based upon my information, most title companies
are tied into underwriting agreement. And if we change the tax, the local company, the Alaskan company, will have to absorb that up until a point that they may be able to renegotiate that underwriter's agreement. So basically what we do, we place the burden of this increased tax on the local vendor. Now, I'm also led to believe that there is a concern of not being able to generate enough income in one category, and there, I guess there is some flow over into other categories, and that is a concern. But I'm told that the least profitable of the title company may be the title insurance, at least the writing of the title insurance, so we further complicate the problem by putting on this additional tax. Let me just summarize. The companies have paid in the terms of tax 1981, $122,000, 1982, $128,000, 1983, $193,000, 84, $191,000, 85, $165,000, $159,000, $110,000, and $100,000. They have paid a fair tax for what appears to be several major hearings on an annual basis. This information doesn't, tells me that it is simply not justified to raise the tax, that they are paying a fair share. Thank you.
Mr. Pettyjohn?
Call the House, Mr. Speaker.
The House has been called on the motion to rescind. Is there further discussion? Mr. Donnelly?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I don't know what the status of the call of the House is. But generally, the information provided by the Division of Insurance is that title insurance has generated as many hearings and meetings in the last 10 years as workers' compensation insurance, which has had an estimated 1988 tax of $4,392,000 versus $100,100 for title insurance. In other words, workers' compensation requires as many hearings and as many meetings as title insurance, but workers' compensation provides 44 times as much revenue as title insurance. And you know, we could pick out different years here and talk about the different amounts, but they're only relative in comparison, Mr. Speaker. You know, we can pick out individual years and say this particular year this happened or this year that happened, but over the past 10 years, that's the fact. Now, the major companies are the ones that pay the tax, Mr. Speaker. The local brokers don't pay the tax. The checks come from the insurance companies to the Division of Insurance. And if they're somehow they've written contracts to that effect, which was originally represented to me, Mr. Speaker, several days ago, but then it was further discovered that that was inaccurate, that the local brokers wouldn't have to eat this. But if there was some reason why there was some agreement out there that they could pass it along, they can't apply for adjustments, and there is recourse to deal with this. So, once again, the 10-year record seems clear. We can pull out individual years here and talk about them, I guess, but overall it's real clear that it's absolutely correct that, you know, workers' comp is paying 44 times as much as this particular under this amendment would create for this particular type of insurance, and involves just as many hearings and meetings.
Mr. Pettyjohn.
I left the call, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you. Further discussion? Mr. Finkelstein.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The co-chair of the Judiciary Committee yesterday reminded us that our Constitution requires equal treatment of equally situated parties in our state, each with equally situated people, and ask the question, what is the basis for this discrimination that this amendment is trying to set up? What's the basis for these unequal tax rates? And I still haven't heard the answer to that question.
Mr. Furness?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm very pleased that the gentleman to my rear asked that question. I think I have a response. It appears to me, yes, there may be some concern that title insurance company may be treated different. But let me share with the body that in the same legislation that the Medical Indemnity Corporation of Alaska, which is a state-created corporation, currently has a tax of 2.7 on the gross, and we're proposing to move that to zero. So, you know, what's the deal here? We're taking one to zero, and this is a state corporation, and we're proposing on a for-profit to increase the other. It appears to me if we wanted to have a real balance that we would treat all writers of insurance equally, and we're certainly not doing it. In this case, I see the medical hospital services, they pay 6%, you know. That's higher than the 2.7. So there appears to be what I want to get here. There appears to be some variability in the rates that we do charge, and I don't think it's a matter of equity. It's a matter of looking at the particular industry and trying to determine what that industry can bear.
Mr. Finkelstein.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, the question's still unanswered. The only argument being made is, well, there's other inequities, and the inequity pointed to is MICA, and it's very easy for us to understand why MICA might have a different standard. MICA is a state-run effort with state funds put in initially in the form of loans, and obviously it's a different group, and the Constitution allows for dissimilar treatment of dissimilar groups. There still has been no explanation, though, on why there's a dissimilar group here.
Mr. Grunberg.
Yes, I'd like to just amplify what my friend from District 13 just said, that with all of the hearings and the public attention that's been focused on the problems of the medical profession in obtaining low cost or even any cost liability insurance, there is very, very heavy evidence in the record, a great deal of evidence, to support that treatment for MICA, which is a state-run insurance, not-for-profit corporation, to deal with a particular problem in the medical community. And as a matter of fact, to my recollection, the Supreme Court has upheld constitutional challenges to the Medical Indemnity Act, the other aspects of that particular program. But on the other hand, in dealing with this particular tax, there is absolutely no evidence, the record is completely devoid of any evidence, that title insurance is anything other than in a very good position. No need has been shown, no overriding public policy has been shown to give these people, and let's be frank, a tax break. And for that reason, I don't think it could survive a rational basis equal protection challenge, which would be very likely.
Mr. Donnelly?
Yeah. The MICA exemption is very consistent because the bill makes a dichotomy between for-profit and non-profit. And it includes non-profit medical insurance providers also, along with MICA. Anybody for-profit, it creates a uniform tax. For non-profit, it has an exception. So that's the dichotomy there. So there's no inconsistency at all. In fact, there's a real, real special good reason for exempting MICA, in that we're currently involved in litigation with the Internal Revenue Service. Because we've taxed MICA in the past with this premium tax, they've made the case that how can MICA really be part of the state if you're taxing them? You wouldn't tax yourself. That's stupid. And if they're not part of the state, then they should have to pay income tax. So it's really crucial that we repeal this premium tax for MICA so we don't have to be paying taxes to the federal government on state government operations. And again, that would have a real detrimental effect if we have to pay taxes to the federal government on MICA's operation to the overall rate of malpractice insurance in the state of Alaska. So, number one, dichotomy in this proposal between for-profit versus non-profit. And number two, the MICA exemption is very important for both those other two reasons.
Mr. Furness?
Mr. Speaker, maybe one last comment. Let me, for the record, I support whatever adjustment and breaks we're giving MICR. I think it does a very adequate job in what it is designed to do, so I have no gripes about that. I simply want to show the similarities. There was a question as to basically the effects. Well, while we realize that MICR has its own special situation and it's designed to meet a very special need, that is the insurance of the medical profession, which has been very difficult to get, I think we also have to consider the effects of any tax increase or change what that effect has on the private sector community. Now, sure with this body, in the heyday of the real estate boom in Alaska, the industry generated $19,334,000 in gross revenues. That's a year they paid $193,000. And that has dropped from $19 million in 1983 to $10 million in 1988. And I suspect since 1989 was another depressed year that's grown even lower. The fact is, the industry has had a 48% drop in gross revenues since 1983 through 1988. So, we have an industry here that has been impacted because of the depressed real estate market, a 48% drop in gross revenues, and we're proposing to increase the tax on this industry by over 200%. It simply doesn't calculate. To the motion.
You ready for the question? The question for the House, shall the House rescind its action in adopting amendment number one? Members may proceed to vote. Does any member fail to vote? Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change their vote? Clerk, take the roll.
16 yeas, 16 nays.
Motion fails. We're back in third readings. There's further discussion on House Bill 355. Ready for the question. Question for the House is, shall committee substitute for House Bill number 355, Labor and Commerce, amended House, passed the House. Members may proceed to vote. Does any member fail to vote? Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change their vote? Mr. Copeland, it changes from no to yes. Any other members? Clerk, please take the roll.
21 yeas, 11 nays.
House Bill 355 has passed the House on reconsideration. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'll move the effective date card.
Ready for the question? Object to the question? We have to vote on this.
Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Donnelly?
On the effective date on this is geared for the effect of the fiscal year. It's pretty important to the substance of the bill. Otherwise, you're going to have these rates kick in some odd time. I mean, it makes a lot of sense to have an effective date at the break of the fiscal year.
House, please stand at ease for a moment. House, please come back to order. Yeah, I see him there. House, please come back to order. Are you ready for the question? Question for the House is, shall the effective date clause be adopted? Members may proceed to vote. Does any member fail to vote? Clerk, lock the roll. Does any member wish to change their vote? Clerk, please take the roll.
27 yeas, 5 nays.
Effective date clause has been adopted. Mr. Grunberg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It gives me a lot of pleasure to introduce a constituent of representatives.
Without objection, we'll return to introduction, I guess.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I hope I do better than the rest of this introduction. It gives me a great deal of personal pleasure to introduce a friend and a constituent of Representative Donnelly and myself. He's our mayor, mayor of Anchorage, and a former speaker, a former speaker of this House, Mayor Tom Fick. Please help me welcome him. And in conjunction with that, I don't see our co-chair of the Anchorage caucus here. We'll be having an Anchorage caucus meeting with Mayor Fink as the guest at noon, and we invite everybody to attend.
Without objection under announcements?
Yes.
Mr. Mayor, Representative Fink, Mr. Speaker, as a tradition of this body, you've got the opportunity now to greet us if you choose to do so. Welcome. Mr. Navarre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to take this opportunity to under introductions to introduce three guests in Gallery B. One is Cheryl Sutton, the other is Kristen Lambert from the City Council in Soldotna, and the third is your brother-in-law, Vince Tillian.
Other introductions? All right. Brings us back to the daily calendar. Would the clerk read the next item on today's calendar?
House Bill 450 by Cotton and Zawacki, an act relating to easements or rights of way within a state park or recreational facility. The Resources Committee has considered the bill, recommends it be replaced with the Resources Committee substitute with the same title and due pass, and attaches a zero fiscal note. Concurring, Menard, Navarre, Jackal, Hudson, Sharp, and M. Davis. Davidson has no recommendation. I have one committee substitute on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move to ask unanimous consent that the Resources Committee substitute for House Bill 450 be considered in lieu of the original bill.
Is there objection? Mr. Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Before anybody jumps to conclusion, I'm going to assure them that we're not in cahoots on what I'm about to say between the differences of the two bills. Because you're the sponsor of it, I don't want people to feel that I've talked to you about this, which isn't true. Mr. Speaker, I originally liked the initial intent because I think it was simple, to the point, straightforward, that there will be access, right-of-ways, easement to private property. Now, it seems to me that we have put in words that may do just the opposite, that may prevent people having easement to the private properties. By first on line 11, we see the Resource Committee put in public easement and or public right-of-ways. And then on line 12 to 15, we add after property where your original bill stopped, if the commissioner determines the easements are right-of-way under two clauses. Well, clause number one says will unduly affect park resources. That word is so, arbitrarily. It can be a narrow concept, it can be a broad concept. And I'm worried about that. And line section number two, in the public interest. Well, I think it's very important that native villages and native people groups have access to the private property that may be barred because of public property being in the way. You have to have a gate to what you bought and what you own. And so therefore, I honestly believe that the short version, the original intent, made it simple and clear and to the point, and it tells the department that you should work out means in which an individual can get to their private properties or tribal group or a native group, whoever has it, instead of putting up the barriers that we see in the resorts committee substitute.
Mr. Menard.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We did talk about that in Resources Committee, what the representative from Anchorage brought up. And during the discussion that we had, it was brought out that some of the members were uncomfortable
with the version that was brought before us. So we worked out a committee substitute that is the result of the bill, the resources bill, that we're hoping to adopt here. And I think there's enough flexibility in this resources CS that allows the what was the intent of the bill and still creates some comfort from DNR's standpoint and Division of Parks and those people that were looking at it, that it will, like it says on line 14 and 15 on those couple of other sentences, it will not unduly affect park resources, and it is in the public interest. I think that we always have to take into consideration when we're talking about public lands and access to private lands that it is in those two concepts. So while the original version was a little more brief, I think the resources version that we have is a better version and serves the public interest.
Mr. Covina.
Ease, Mr. Speaker.
Oh, yeah, stand at ease. Mr. Davis, you wish the floor? No. Mr. Grunberg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just in answer to my friend from District 13 who's just spoken, I think that the bill actually will probably assist in providing access for easements under the present language, because under the way it was previously drafted, the department might issue an easement, and there were no standards. And the only question a reviewing court could consider was whether there had been an abuse of discretion. But there would be carte blanche to the department to issue easements or deny the issuance of easements for any reason whatsoever. Absolutely no standards were set. But here, it basically requires the granting of an easement unless the commissioner determines that it will unduly affect the park resources or is not in the public interest. So it really will limit the discretion to deny the easement. And I think it will, for that reason, make it and open up these private areas even more by allowing the granting of easements. And restricting to some extent the ability of the department to deny the easements. So I think it's a very good amendment that they did in the Resources Committee.
Ready for the question? Mr. Hoffman?
We move on.
We have an at ease, please.
House, please stand at ease. House, please come back to order. The motion before the House is to adopt the Resources Committee substitute. Is there further objection?
I'll remove my objection.
Is there objection to the adoption of the Resources Committee substitute? Is there objection? Hearing no objection, the Resources Committee substitute has been adopted in lieu of the original bill. Does the clerk have amendments?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent the Resources Committee substitute for House Bill 450 be considered in gross advance third reading and placed on final passage.
Is there objection to the advancement motion? Is there objection? Hearing no objection, the bill has been advanced from second to third reading. Would the clerk please read the bill for the third time?
Committee substitute for House Bill 450 Resources by the Resources Committee. An act relating to easements or rights of way within a state park or recreational facility.
Is there discussion? Are you ready for the question? Question for the House is shall committee substitute for House Bill number 450 pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Any member failed to vote? Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change their vote? Clerk, please take the roll.
29 yeas, no nays.
House Bill 450 has passed the House. Mr. Boucher?
Mr. Speaker, I request permission to go to announcements.
Is there objection? Without objection, Mr. Boucher, under announcements?
This is not normal. We should do it later. But because of the strong interest in the ethics legislation, I just wanted to briefly indicate what we are doing. State Affairs has been moving aggressively drafting to get a piece of legislation over to House State Affairs. We're hoping that we'll be able to get it today and it will be read across Monday. But lots of people have indicated that they had a concern, they didn't have the opportunity to ask questions. So in view of this, Mr. Speaker, as I discussed earlier with you this morning, we are going to, on Monday morning at 8:30 in State Affairs, hold an informational hearing on the proposed legislation that Mr. Jefferson has proposed to the Senate so that we can bring the House up to speed on it. He will be on teleconference, and representatives, I'm sure many in the House are interested in it. We will have the opportunity to go over and ask some questions on his presentation, and hopefully by that time we'll have proposed legislation. So that's Monday at 8:30 in State Affairs, an informational hearing on ethics legislation. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Other announcements? Would the clerk please read the next item on today's calendar?
House Bill 465 by the Rules Committee by request of the Governor. An act relating to telephone access and monitoring inside correctional facilities. The Hess Committee has considered the bill, recommends as follows. Signing DuPass, Boyer. Signing no recommendation, Ellis and C. Davis. Jackal signed to amend. The Judiciary Committee has considered the bill, recommends it be replaced with a Judiciary Committee substitute with the same title and due pass. Concurring, M. Davis, Ellis, Gruenberg, and Gall. Having no recommendation, Miller and Martin. I have no amendments on my... I have one committee substitute on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the Judiciary Committee substitute for House Bill 465 be considered in lieu of the original bill.
Is there objection? Is there objection? Hearing no objection, the Judiciary Committee substitute has been adopted in lieu of the original bill. Does the clerk have amendments?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the Judiciary Committee substitute for House Bill 465 be considered engrossed in advance third reading and placed on final passage.
Is there objection to the advancement motion? Is there objection? Hearing no objection, the bill's been advanced from second to third reading. Would the clerk read the bill for the third time?
Committee substitute for House Bill 465 Judiciary by the Judiciary Committee. An act relating to telephone access and monitoring inside correctional facilities.
Is there discussion? Are you ready for the question? Question for the House is, shall committee substitute for House Bill number 465 Judiciary pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Does any member fail to vote? Clerk, lock the roll. Does any member wish to change their vote? Clerk, please take the roll.
27 yeas, no nays.
House Bill 465 has passed the House. Clerk, please read the next item on this. Mr. Gruenberg. House of Stand at Ease. House, please come back to order. Okay. Maybe we'll get to your bill, maybe we won't. A lot of activity. House, please come back to order. Mr. Kopanen.
Yes, sir. I revert to introduction of guests.
Without objection, Mr. Kopanen.
Thank you. I have a guest in Gallery A, Terry Jasinski, who is with the Alaska Craftsman's Home Program.
Brings us back to consideration of today's calendar. Would the clerk read the next item on today's calendar?
House Bill 478. By Almer, Brown, Finkelstein, Ellis, Navarre, Kopanen, M. Davis, Boyer, Kubina, Gall, Menard, Swackhammer, and Jackal. an act relating to solid and hazardous waste management. The Community and Regional Affairs Committee has considered the bill, recommends it be replaced with a CNRA committee substitute with the same title and due pass, adopts a CNRA letter of intent, and attaches a fiscal note. Signing due pass, McLean, Kubina, and Foster. Having no recommendations, C. Davis. The Finance Committee has considered the bill and recommends it be replaced with a CNRA committee substitute and due pass, and attaches a fiscal note and a zero fiscal note. Signing due pass, Wack, Emmer, Brown, Kopenen, and Ulmer. Signing no recommendation, Hoffman, Larson, and Barnes. Rieger signed to amend. I have one committee substitute on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent to CNRA committee substitute for House Bill 478 be considered in lieu of the original bill.
Is there objection? Is there objection? Hearing no objection, the Community and Regional Affairs Committee substitute has been adopted in lieu of the original bill. Clerk has amendments there. Would you read the first amendment?
Amendment number one by Rieger, and it starts on page 5, lines 1, 2, and 3, and it has been placed on each member's desk.
Mr. Rieger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move amendment number one, ask unanimous consent.
There is objection, Mr. Rieger.
Mr. Speaker, the purpose of this amendment is to preserve, I guess, what I guess is the intent of the amendments which were made in Community and Regional Affairs to exempt some areas from having to match these solid waste grants on a dollar-for-dollar basis. I have a concern in what kind of burden this puts on the Department of Environmental Conservation to have to pick and choose which communities or which areas are worthy of a grant and which communities and areas are worthy only of a matched grant, which requires a 50-50 match. And what the amendment does is just make it a grant for everybody, and I think that takes a lot of the burden off of DEC. It's a more equitable method of applying this grant program, and I think that it is really unfair to ask to put DEC in charge of picking and choosing among communities in that fashion. So this amendment would conform it to be equal for all. Thank you.
Representative Ulmer, our sponsor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. If members would direct their attention to page 5 of the committee substitute, you'll note that subsections 1 and 2 indicate that the grant must be matched either in kind or in cash, and that each grant may not exceed $50,000. That's how the bill was originally written. However, subsection F was added by the Community and Regional Affairs Committee, and subsection F basically indicates that the department may waive the match requirement if it's determined that a community cannot meet the match. This did respond to concerns that were raised primarily from members from rural areas as to the smaller communities' inability to perhaps make the match either in cash or in kind. The effect of the proposed amendment number one is, as indicated by the sponsor, to remove the match requirement. That's a policy question for the legislature. I think it makes sense to have a match requirement so that communities have to invest either some money or some of their resources in making this a meaningful grant. I think it does make sense to allow the department to waive it under circumstances that the commissioner can decide upon on a case-by-case basis. I really think that the match requirement should stay in the bill, and so I would urge members to vote no.
Mr. Rieger.
Mr. Speaker, just to wrap up, even with the amendment, a community is not precluded from matching these dollars if they choose. The only thing the amendment does is to take the picking and choosing of communities that are worthy or not worthy of receiving a grant versus a match out of the bill and make it a neutral program. I really don't care if everyone is required to have to match or if everyone gets a grant, but I think that the thing that I find objectionable is to put a department which really has no expertise in communities and their finances in charge of choosing who has the capability and who doesn't to provide a match for a grant program.
Mr. Kopenen.
Thank you. I note that document that I have says this is an amendment to CSHB 479, but I presume it is 478. I oppose the amendment largely because in the discussions that took place, the intent of the current language is to provide an incentive, not a giveaway program. I don't like to see it converted into a giveaway.
Ready for the question? Question for the House is, shall amendment number one pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Does any member fail to vote? Clerk will lock the roll. Does any member wish to change their vote? Clerk, please take the roll.
12 yeas, 20 nays.
Amendment number one has failed. Clerk, please read the next amendment.
Amendment number two by Hanley to page 5, line 4, and it has been placed on each member's desk.
Representative Hanley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move amendment number two and ask unanimous consent.
There's objection, Representative Hanley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This amendment I drafted was also to provide some incentives and to encourage some competition. I think if we take $500,000 and just kind of spread it out there and put it out for anyone with a project that perhaps is kind of half-baked and not really well-conceived, but perhaps would still be eligible for this grant. I think that perhaps the best way to succeed in doing this is to have three or four very successful projects so that then other communities, I think, would look at those and want them rather than to have kind of maybe a dozen or 13, 14 things happening out there and maybe some things not happening. And I would like to encourage communities to really to focus on this, to really put a great deal of time into it, and to really be deserving of the grant when they come up with a project that's worth having the state fund. So I think this would probably encourage a little bit of competition and provide some incentive for communities to vie for that state grant.
Representative Ulmer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm afraid there is a fundamental misconception about what these grants do. These do not fund projects. These fund planning money, technical assistance to communities to help them solve their solid waste management problems and to help encourage them to use innovative technologies, recycling, et cetera, in the process of doing so. There are literally dozens of communities all around the state of Alaska that are in crisis conditions in terms of trying to deal today with their solid waste management problems. And often they are picking solutions that are not really appropriate, either in terms of scale or in terms of affordability for that community. They're doing so because they are crying out for help and there's no place to go. They're doing so because they have no planning capability, either in terms of their own community or in terms of the state, to help them make wise planning choices so that they don't waste their money when they do finally decide to go with a particular solution, whether that's an incinerator or whatever it might be. There are communities all over the state that need to help get some help in terms of making wise decisions right now. This is sort of a penny-wise, pound-foolish sort of an attempt to siphon off some of the money by saying we'll only do four a year. There are four in Southeast right now, Petersburg, Wrangell, Ketchikan, Haines, and Skagway, all of which are trying right now to decide what to do about their solid waste problems, that this kind of money would help them make better decisions. That's what this is all about. So to limit it to four, it seems to me, would be to put many, many communities in the state of Alaska in a situation where they could not get the money and the help that they need so desperately right now. We'd make them wait longer, and in that waiting time, they'd probably make more mistakes in terms of decisions, in terms of the capital construction projects that they go forward with in their communities. Please vote no.
Ready for the question? Representative Hanley.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just, in looking at this and not having been on one of the committees that really considered this legislation, I guess I'm reluctant to look at spending $500,000 to explore reduction to provide assistance to help communities focus. As I read through this, I don't feel anything concrete. At the same time, it's hard for me to believe that we don't have some mechanism in the state right now who could assist the communities that are in these dire straits that the previous representative described. So I still think the amendment is appropriate, and I would urge the members to vote yes.
Mr. Schultz?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I stand in favor of this amendment. And the reason I do is because each one of us in the years past and maybe this year have an opportunity as we spend capital monies for our districts, et cetera, to put money in. If we see this as a very high priority, we put our money into it. As a matter of fact, last year, we put in $65,000 for DEC to do a study in our area of sites that had been shut down, dump sites, et cetera. They took the $65,000 and did a study in our area and were supposed to come back with recommendations, okay? And so far we've expended $65,000, and the recommendation is that we don't have a recommendation. So, it was kind of a drill in futility, as far as I'm concerned. The people still do not have a sanitary landfill, a legal landfill. As a matter of fact, they've been shut down. So, as a result of that, the money could be better spent, in my opinion, going directly to the communities to help rectify the problems, rather than, and I'm opposed to the whole resolution, as a matter of fact, or the whole bill. So I believe that we have the mechanisms and the technology already there, and we don't need the technical assistance, because I, for one, can vouch for the fact that DEC does not have the technical assistance available to them, because I have spent, for my district, $65,000, and they have yet to make a recommendation. And it's unfortunate, because I thought that as a result of that, that we would come up with some very sound and very good ideas that could be implemented. And the reason we did this, put the money in there, because we were hoping that, in fact, that study would have long-term ramifications on other rural areas of the state of Alaska, and that it would be money well spent. And so far, that hasn't proven to be the case.
Lieutenant Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, one of the things that is driving this whole situation are new federal requirements. The federal government is adopting regulations that are going to require all landfills to be lined. And this is very expensive. And many people believe that a good way for Alaska to proceed our communities, and I'd like to say garbage is basically a local problem, not a state problem, and the locals need some assistance in working out regional solutions. One small community cannot necessarily afford what's needed to comply with the federal law, and the type of grants that are proposed in this bill will help make it possible for groups and groups of communities and regions to come up with appropriate solutions that are cost effective. We're spending lots of money through the capital budget, through the Village Safe Water Program, through the 50-50 matching grant program. We need to be sure that the dollars, when we do spend those, that we've come up with the best idea that'll serve the broadest base of people. So I think this amendment is too limiting. It will cut out many opportunities that communities have or should have and would have should this bill become law. So I'd appreciate a no vote on this.
Ready for the question? Question before the House. Shall amendment number 2 pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Any member fail to vote? Clerk lock the rolls. Any member wish to change their vote? Clerk, please take the roll.
10 yeas, 23 nays.
Amendment number 2 has failed to pass the House. Clerk, read amendment number three.
Amendment number three by Lehman to page 5, lines 5 through 7. Delete subsection F in its entirety.
Mr. Lehman.
Mr. Speaker, I move amendment number three.
I think we've already voted on this. This was contained in amendment number one. The same amendment was a part of amendment number one, isn't that correct?
There's quite a difference between the two amendments.
Yeah, I'll allow it now. What you could have done was to ask for a division of the question on one and gotten to the same amendment, but I'll say the amendment's properly before us, Mr. Lehman.
Mr. Speaker, amendment number three, I think is really important. When I listened to the debate, I appreciated what a friend from Juneau and also from Chena Ridge had to say on maintaining a matching requirement. We don't want to have a giveaway program. But I just want to share from my own experience as to why it would be important to have a match. This is consistent with the EPA program for construction grants. It was at one time a 75% grant program, actually higher than that for some special cases. It was switched to 55% to increase the local share, and now it's a loan program. I've found in my experience that having a match increases the responsibility for the use of the funds. And I think that people will find that their projects, the spending of project money will be done a lot better. And then the third point I make is that it still allows for in-kind contribution. I've done a lot of work in rural Alaska, and I appreciate the concerns for those who represent rural Alaska. The concerns on not having the resources, the cash resources especially, to provide the match. However, there are numerous ways to provide in-kind contributions, and some of the ones that I've seen are in labor. A lot of talent in rural Alaska and just providing in labor, materials, equipment, and in transportation are some of the means of providing this. When we look at technical assistance and planning, some of the areas that might enter into solid waste work would include groundwater monitoring, geotechnical investigations, and even mapping. All of these areas may be part of this work. And so I see that each community could quite easily provide their in-kind match, and I think it makes the bill a lot better. I'd like it with the amendment in it, and I urge the body to consider that.
Ready for the question? Question for the House. Shall amendment number three pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Does any member fail to vote? Clerk, lock the roll. Does any member wish to change their vote? Clerk, please take the roll.
11 yeas, 22 nays.
Amendment number three has failed. Does the clerk have additional amendments?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Wallace.
Can we have a at ease, please?
House of Standard Ease. Clerk, have additional amendments?
Not on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Moving to ask unanimous consent that this Community and Regional Affairs Committee substitute for House Bill 478 be considered engrossed in advance third reading and placed on final effect.
Is there objection to the advancement motion? Is there objection? Hearing no objection, House Bill 478 has been advanced from second to third reading. Would the clerk please read the bill for the third time?
Committee substitute for House Bill 478, CNRA, by the CNRA Committee. An act relating to solid and hazardous waste management.
Further discussion? Ready for the question? Question before the House. Is shall committee substitute for House Bill number 478 pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Does any member fail to vote? Clerk, lock the roll. Any member wish to change their vote? Clerk, please take the roll.
24 yeas, 8 nays.
House Bill 478 passed the House. Clerk, please read the next item on today's calendar.
House Bill 532 by Collins, Kopanen, Finkelstein, Navarre, Hanley, Swackhammer, Davidson, Lehman, C. Davis, Brown, and Barnes. An act requiring the placement of certain coating on certain plastic bottles and containers and providing for an effective date. The Labor and Commerce Committee has considered the bill, recommends it do pass, and attaches a fiscal note. Concurring, Donnelly, Finkelstein, Lehman, Collins, and Gruenberg. The Finance Committee has considered the bill, recommends it be replaced with a Finance Committee substitute with the same title and do pass. Concurring, Larson, Swackhammer, Brown, Kopanen, Omer, Barnes, Phillips, and Rieger. Having no recommendation, Hoffman, Schultz, and Wallace. I have one committee substitute on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 532 be considered in lieu of the original bill.
Is there objection? Is there objection? Hearing no objection, the Finance Committee substitute has been adopted in lieu of the original bill. Does the clerk have amendments?
Amendment number one by Representatives Collins and Brown, and it has been duplicated and placed on each member's desk.
Representative Collins.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move amendment number one and ask unanimous consent.
Is there objection? There is objection. Representative Collins, you have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Amendment number one merely just tightens up the language for an amendment that was made in House Finance. And essentially what it does, it allows the department some flexibility to promulgate regulations and would allow them to change the coding system if there were a change on a national level. And it would just mean that we wouldn't have to come back and do another piece of legislation. So it gives them that flexibility, but it also limits them and requires that the coding system that the department identifies be consistent with a national coding standard.
Objection maintained. Mr. Gruenberg. Objection maintained to amendment number one. Is there objection? Hearing no objection, amendment number one's passed the House. Would the clerk read the next amendment?
Amendment number two by Representatives Collins and Brown, and it has been placed on each member's desk.
Representative Collins.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move amendment number two and ask unanimous consent.
Is there objection? Is there objection? Hearing no objection, amendment number two has been adopted. Does the clerk have additional amendments?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent the Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 532 amended be considered in gross advance third reading and placed on final passage.
Is there objection? Is there objection? Hearing no objection, the bill has been advanced from second to third reading. Would the clerk please read the bill for the third time?
Committee substitute for House Bill 532 Finance amended by the Finance Committee. An act requiring the placement of certain coating on certain plastic bottles and containers and providing for an effective date.
Is there discussion? Are you ready for the question? Question before the House, shall committee substitute for House Bill number 532, Finance, amended House, pass the House. Members may proceed to vote. Does any member fail to vote? Clerk, lock the roll. Does any member wish to change their vote? Clerk, please take the roll. Mr. Majority Leader, would the clerk void the roll call, please? Ready for the question? Question for the House is shall committee substitute for House Bill number 532, Finance, amended House, pass the House. Members may proceed to vote. Does any member fail to vote? Mr. Grusendorf? Mr. Hoffman? Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change their vote? Clerk, please take the roll.
31 yeas, no nays.
House Bill 532 has passed the House. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call vote on final passage be considered the roll call vote on the effective date clause.
Is there objection? Is there objection to the effective date clause? Hearing no objection, the effective date clause has been adopted. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Consent the citation be approved.
Is there objection? Hearing no objection, the citation has been approved. Mr. Majority Leader. Excuse me. Under unfinished business, Mr. Pettyjohn.
Mr. Speaker, I would request that we take up reconsideration of House Bill 300 at this time.
Oops. Excuse me, Ari. House Bill 300. Is before you in third reading. The clerk, please read the bill for the third time.
Committee substitute for House Bill 300, Judiciary, by the Judiciary Committee. An act relating to acquisition and ownership of capital stock of a public utility by a political subdivision. Relating to certain property records maintained by public utilities and including the customers of a public utility that has an annual compensation in excess of $50,000 in the definition of public for public utility regulation.
Is there further discussion? Mr. Rieger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I had some reservations about this bill yesterday, and the more I think about it, the more I have a concern about Section 4 and the new definition of public. House Bill 300 now defines public as being one or more customers. And it goes on to describe that some, but I looked through Section 4205 of the statutes on what public utilities are, and a public utility is someone who furnishes something to the public. And it looks like, what bothers me, it looks like this bill now means that someone who furnishes things like electricity, telecommunications, water, steam, whatever, to one other person, someone who just furnishes to one other person is now a utility. And I'm trying to think of examples that might occur out in remote areas where there is a company who contracts with another company to provide the power for that remote plant. And it would be for compensation, I assume, between two entities. But it's really what seems to me to be a private contract between the two. And now that public has been defined down to just one individual, that is a utility furnishing that service to the public. And I'm trying to look for ways to make the APUC's life easier, and it just seems to me like this might expand the number of regulated utilities manyfold in this state, and I'd like someone to explain why that's not true.
Further discussion? Mr. Donnelly?
That's the whole point of the bill, Mr. Speaker, is to prevent some special company coming in and creating up a cherry-picking situation where they go in and take the cream off the market, so to speak, by negotiating with one large customer in a particular district. I suggest members vote against any changes.
Mr. Rieger?
Mr. Speaker, now that I know that that's the intent of the bill, I'm much more concerned about it. I'm not thinking of cases of cherry picking. I'm thinking of cases where there are two private companies entering into an agreement between the two of them who suddenly are now becoming defined as utilities when there's no cherry picking involved. It's some operation off in a remote location. And I think that this is going to vastly expand the amount of private contracts that are regulated by the APUC.
Mr. Schultz?
May we have an adhesive, please?
Thank you. Order. Mr. Majority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the Judiciary Committee substitute for House Bill 300 be held in third reading until Monday's calendar.
Is there objection? Hearing no objection, the bill is held till Monday's calendar. Is there unfinished business? Come forward to the House. Representative Hanley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I give reconsideration of my vote on House Bill 478.
Reconsideration has been given on 478. Other unfinished business? Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'll move and ask unanimous consent that the following members be excused on the days mentioned. Representative Jackal, who I excused today through Saturday, playing time Saturday, April 7th. Representative Gall from 9:30 a.m. Wednesday, April 11th through playing time Thursday, April 12th.
Is there objection? Hearing no objection, those members are excused on those dates. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I also have a somewhat unusual request for excused absence, and I'm going to go ahead and make it. One of the pages is asked to be excused from the call of the House on all sunny days, weekends, and each morning until 9 a.m.
We'll stick it out together. Other unfinished business. Are there announcements?
Which one?
Mr. Gruenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Today, in House Judiciary, the first bill we'll hear will be under unfinished business, and it'll be the subrogation bill, Bill 429. I'd ask members to be present so we can move on in.
Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The House Finance Subcommittee on House Bill 409, which relates to administrative penalties for environmental pollution, is going to have a brief meeting today at 3:30 and a work session at noon tomorrow in the House Resources Room. The 3:30 meeting today is in the Speaker's Chambers, and the meeting at noon tomorrow is in the House Resources Committee Room.
Mr. Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The in the Finance Committee room today at 4 o'clock, we're going to be having the first presentation on the Governor's maintenance capital budget.
Mr. Larson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. Tomorrow morning at 8:30, the House Majority Leadership Committee will be holding a meeting in the House Finance Committee room, with the topic being discussion of the budget.
Other announcements? Are there special orders? Mr. Majority Leader.
Speaker, I move that the House stand in adjournment until 11 a.m. Monday.
We're adjourned to 11 a.m. Monday.